views expressed on the following broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
God is a solution. God is a 12-step.
I like where he's going here.
Helps the community grow, helps us grow. Bonnie has done a phenomenal job.
And you're talking about taking people through a spiritual process, getting them into recovery.
Thanks, Monty, and thanks for all your support.
We need spirituality to make this thing work long-term.
It's an absolute pleasure. You certainly know a lot of people.
This is one of the places that is about the business of the solution.
And now, broadcasting on location somewhere in the vast expanse of the Pacific Northwest, it's the over-opinionated 12-stepologist, the Monty Man.
That's right. Well, welcome one and all. Welcome to Roger McDermott from Huntington Beach, California, our co-host.
There Good is. Morning, everybody.
Good morning. And then swinging over there, and Dave Fleming is with us today. There he is.
Good morning.
All smiles, sitting fresh, next to Cecil the Gnome.
Fresh from a drive from PDX.
Yeah. So Dave had the pleasant experience of dropping his wife off at the Portland airport. That is always a daunting experience to me because you got to get up so early and then you got to fight. Did you go 205?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you got to go 205 and fight that. And if you're on a time crunch, yeah, I mean, I remember we had to be in the airport at a certain time, and the traffic was so bad, it was like we didn't think we were going to make it.
Right.
You know, it's really nasty. So.
Well, I made sure that allowed for her to get there 2 hours ahead of time.
2 hours, yeah.
That way, if we run late, and then we had a half hour cushion. So.
Yep. That's what you got to do. All right. Well, welcome to the show, everybody. The topic this week is an honest self-assessment, a step four discussion. And before we get into all that, though, no weekly wine this week. Sorry, Roger.
What? Oh, man.
But I just thought I would bring it. When I stumble on something I've never heard of before, I like to share it, especially if it's very interesting. So my two sons and Marcia and I were having a discussion about children because, you know, they're new parents and we're new grandparents. And Pierce, our grandson, is a little over a year old now. And we were talking about kids' brains and their learning and that kind of thing. There are basically two philosophies about children and their mind. One is called innatism, and that's the view that the mind is born with already formed ideas, knowledge, and beliefs. The opposing belief is called tabula rasa, or the blank slate philosophy, that at birth, all knowledge is gained from experience and senses. So you are born with a blank slate, and everything that you learn is stuff as you go, basically. So those are the two dominating philosophies. But in this discussion, we discovered that there is actually a philosophy that says, now wait for it, that children in the womb and for several days after birth actually have all knowledge of everything. And so we were joking around about it. So when Pierce goes, what dad? What he's really saying is, look it, you guys better run for the bomb shelters because the world is coming to an end in 3 days, you know, or the stock market is going down. So prepare yourself. He just can't get it out. He just can't say it because his body hasn't developed to where he can share that knowledge that he has.
His vocal cords haven't developed.
Yeah,
fully.
Right. So then we were joking about that explains. Mm-hmm. And then you know how when you get older, you go backwards. You know, we take care of our parents as they get older because, you know, they're having physical ailments they didn't have when they were younger. Maybe they're moving into dementia, you know, that kind of thing. Well, that they're actually regaining all that knowledge that they've lost growing up, but they're losing the ability to share it because they have dementia now. Well, we were joking around about this, but guess what? It actually is a belief system, and some of it kind of mirrors Mormonism and also Buddhism. In the Mormon, and for our Mormon friends out there, if you're Mormon, correct me if I'm wrong here, or enlighten us, send us an email, but there is the idea that you are already you're already existing in heaven with your Heavenly Father, and you are sent to earth as a baby to be tested. And then you grow up and eventually you become kind of your own God and you can get your own planet and that kind of thing in Mormon doctrine. And so you already have all knowledge, but you come here as a baby and you kind of start over. Well, in looking for the new yogi or the new Buddha or whatever, you know, their children, there's one that is the one they seek after for the new one after the main one has passed away. And he's got all knowledge too, but he doesn't know how to communicate it. So he has to learn through the teachings of the other Buddhas and that kind of thing. So it's actually not an uncommon belief that children are born with all knowledge already. They just can't communicate it. What do you think about that, Roger? What do you think?
I think I'm a fool if that's the truth.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've found that life is an experience and an adventure of constant learning. So I don't believe that I was born with all knowledge at all.
Of course.
In fact, I don't even remember the first few years of my life.
Well, no, you don't. And so if you didn't remember any of that stuff, you wouldn't know that you actually were born with all knowledge because you've forgotten it.
Well, let me ask you a question. If I'm born with all knowledge, then what's the point of learning anything?
Because you forgot it. You got to learn it over again.
So I had it, but I forgot it.
I'm playing devil's advocate here. Evidently.
Maybe you just need to learn what you didn't comprehend the first time.
Well, this would speak to the whole reincarnation thing, right? That some people adhere to. Mm-hmm. You know, well, you had it, but you didn't get it right when you tried the second time. So now we got to try a third time. And gosh, I'm glad we don't actually live
maybe
like that.
You have it, but yeah, you haven't unlocked it. It's kind of like, it's kind of like you only use a certain percentage of your brain.
Right.
Well, there's got to be one way to unlock it of the other part. And same with DNA, right? You only, we haven't tapped into like all of our potential.
Yeah.
I buy that for sure. I mean,
they say
if
we could tap into like even 15% of our brain, we'd be like superheroes, you know?
Sure. Sure. Interesting stuff. Yeah. Send in what you think. Maybe you're one of those people that didn't forget everything and you do know everything. I've known some people like that. They're called narcissists.
Well, if they knew everything, they know everything, wouldn't they like know like the lottery numbers and
you would think, right?
How to get pick the right numbers on which days. Yeah,
you would think. I was watching an episode of Young Sheldon the other day, and he had discovered, so, you know, there's this idea in science that everything is made up of zeros and ones, right? And so he was talking to somebody, and he stopped, and he said, I think it was Billy, his neighbor buddy. And it's like, well, zero is zero, so that's nothing, right? And Sheldon was like thinking about it, and he was like, oh no, if zero is nothing, then it doesn't exist. But zero is something because it's a zero. So now we have a problem, you know? And so he could not put the pieces. So he went to his different professors in this episode, and they're going, oh my gosh, you're right. So the conclusion was nothing is real.
And nothing is real. Okay.
Yeah. And so, but if nothing is real, nothing is something.
That's like the question about the glass, right?
Yeah.
Is it half full or half empty?
Sure.
It's all the way full.
Hmm.
Because the top part has air in it, right?
Right.
Well, that's something.
Oh, that's something. So it
is like full. It's like having faith in something you can't see, right?
Yeah.
So is it there or is it not there?
It's both. And I think that's the conclusion they came to, that we're both nothing and we're both something at the same time. But it was like they were giving themselves migraines trying to figure it out, you know. Yeah.
And then does that tell you, like, really? How smart are you really?
Yeah. So if you're a zero and you're nothing, then you can't even say you're a zero, because saying it says that there's something. But if there's nothing, then there can't be something.
So what is the one then, if it's zero and one?
And I think that was a dilemma they came across too. Rabbi Taub, a Messianic Jew that spoke at a recovery event down in Southern California several years ago. I loved what he said. He had all these doctors and PhDs and scientists and everything at this big recovery symposium called the Evolution of Addiction Treatment Conference. And he got up to speak. So he was the spiritual speaker. So it was Sunday morning, right? He got up to speak, and he looked at everybody and he said, "You're all nothing. I'm nothing and you're nothing." And you could have heard a pin drop, because all these, you know, genius minds are sitting there going, where is he going with this? And he said, "God doesn't make something from something. He makes something from nothing. And he has made something from you." And then they're like, wow. I mean, they were like, mind blown.
Deep, man.
But to say that to a bunch of science-minded people just goes against everything that they want to talk about. Right, because then he got into the whole thing about God and how He created us and how we exist, and to see the faces on some of these guys. But he got a standing ovation at the end of his presentation. But there you go, little nonsense to start the show.
So he made something out of nothing.
He made something out of nothing. Yeah. There. All right. Just to let you know, coming up on Wednesdays is the Short Monty Man's Recovery Meditorial. On Friday, on Walking Through the Language of the Heart, the episode that we're going to be talking about is the article Bill Wilson wrote in The Grapevine called Problems Other Than Alcohol. I'm really excited about this show because it's very controversial within our 12-step fellowships, particularly within Alcoholics Anonymous, because people want to argue, you know, do we talk about this? Do we talk about that? And Bill Wilson actually wrote a pamphlet on this, and he shared it in The Grapevine. So Chris S. and myself will be talking about problems other than alcohol on Walking Through the Language of the Heart. And then next Monday on Solutions for Life Today with Dave Fleming, the topic is giving of ourselves and why men have a hard time sharing and doing that. We're going to be talking about that on next Monday's show. So there you go. There's a lineup coming up. Yeah. All right. So we're going to take a short break and come back, and we're going to jump right into an honest self-assessment, a step four discussion. Hey, come on and have some fun with me. I'm the Monty Man, and I am the co-host of Walking Through the Language of the Heart, a workshop that we are developing, putting together, and currently broadcasting here at Take 12 Recovery Radio, which includes AA co-founder Bill W.'s writings in The Grapevine from 1944 to 1970. Walking Through the Language of the Heart with myself and Chris S., is broadcasting and posted every Friday until we're completely done with this wonderful book. Simply visit us at take12radio.com, click on the Recovery Workshops banner, and there you'll find Walking Through the Language of the Heart, as well as other recovery workshops that we've produced here for you for free at Take 12 Recovery Radio. Visit us once again take12radio.com, scroll down to the Recovery Workshops banner, click it, and you'll be well on your way.
Papa was a rolling stone, my son, yeah. Wherever he laid his hat was his home. Only the left was well alone.
Oh, yeah.
Little Temptations there. Yeah. Baby. Sweet.
Great way to start the show with Shaft. and then the Temptation.
Well, actually,
the Rolling Stone.
Actually, believe it or not, the beginning, a little sound clip at the beginning of the show was the beginning of that song, Papa Was a Rolling Stone. But it sounded like the Shaft thing, didn't it? It had that
it
bass
like the
thing.
Theme from Shaft.
Right,
yeah.
Right. The Temptations. Yeah. Tempting. All right. A step forward discussion entitled An Honest Self-Assessment. So that would suggest that we're going to tell the truth.
Don't we always?
I don't know. So step four in the 12 steps is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. I want to say right off the bat that it's searching and moral, and the way this was explained to me from my sponsor years ago was we're going to look under every rock, we're going to pull the covers off, and we're going to do it in a moral fashion, which in this context means truthful. We're going to tell the truth. This is going to be a searching and fearless moral inventory, a truthful inventory. And it's going to be fearless because Dave, what?
When you're done.
Okay. So we're gonna, my camera's like, there we go. It's good. It's interesting because part of the inventory is there is a fear inventory involved. So we're going to make a fearless inventory. We're going to have to talk about fear, right? And so that's what we're going to talk about today is and have a discussion about step four. Dave, go ahead. What did you want to interject?
Well, there's always been this, I don't know if it's controversial or not, but
okay.
Here's a question.
Sure.
Everybody wants to know, how many times do you do a four step?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a very good question.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think it can be controversial because you have different viewpoints on that.
Because mm-hmm. I got people saying, "Well, I've done 10 fourth steps." I'm like, "Why?"
Right. So, and let's see what Roger said. Well, Roger, what do you think about that? And then I'll give you my two cents. What do you think about that? How many times do you do a four step?
I do a four step once. When I'm done, when I get up to step nine, my four step becomes step 10, and I do it every day. I don't need to do another four step period.
Good answer.
Here's the what's the word? Caveat?
Caveat? The caveat?
Right? Is you have to do a, what is it called? A searching
and fearless moral inventory. Yeah.
So if you haven't done that, if you only done just
a half,
a surface.
Yeah.
Thing,
yeah.
Then you haven't done a four step.
That's right.
So then you haven't done a four step. Then you have to do it.
Right. So right. Until you've actually
that doesn't mean you do it again because you didn't do it the first time.
Well, you could say you've done it, but you haven't done it searching and fearless moral inventory, right?
Right.
That's where people get stuck is they haven't gone deep and looked
Isn't
under every
like
rock.
A white lie and a half truth. A lie is a lie, and the truth
right.
is the truth.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've either done a searching, fearless, moral inventory,
or you,
or
haven't.
You haven't.
Or you haven't.
But or you haven't.
A lot of people yeah. will say they've done a four step, but really haven't.
Yeah. And so you have this idea that every year I go through the steps, and so I'm on my third year of doing step four or whatever. I mean, I've heard a million different angles to it, but I'm with you guys. I think for me, I had a one-time formal working of the steps, right?
Yep.
1 through 12. And what I learned was that what is some people refer to as the maintenance steps, I think it goes further than that, 10, 11, 12. I think it's a continuing to grow and mature step, steps. It's more than just maintenance. But within those three is what step nine would say is the things that we intuitively know how to handle now. You know, so yeah, when I did my four step, and I did do it wrong in the beginning.
Usually we do. I did the first time I did it, I didn't do a I left a whole bunch of stuff out.
Yeah, me too. But when I actually did a thorough fearless moral inventory, mm-hmm. right, then I was done with that. Now, do I have things that come up in my life that I need to fourth step? Sure.
Step 10.
You know, are there things, you know, my sponsor might say, you might want to work a, you know, four step around that one. But that's kind of a different approach than the form of working that happens once. You know, I don't have to carry around a pocket full of 3x5 cards anymore. You know, that's, you better write down, you know, take an inventory on this. I can do it in my heart. I can see my part in the situation. I've learned how to do that. And I can apply that on the fly.
Yeah.
I don't need to sit down and do this big, long, lengthy doohickey. Doohickey?
Doohickey? Whatchamacallit?
Is a doohickey part of a four step?
I think it is.
I may have to go back and do one.
A thorough doohickey.
Step 10.
And so I'm with you guys. I think if you have to continually go back and redo it, then you haven't done it right the first time. And that's okay. Do it right this time, mm-hmm. you know. But that's why so often we need help with this stuff. I like one of the things that it's. I think it's in the step working guide that Narcotics Anonymous puts out. It says there's only one way to do this wrong, and that's by yourself. You know, when you're sitting down for the first time and walking through something that you need direction to follow the directions. The only wrong way to do it is alone because right. you need some guidance.
There's nothing in the big book that would indicate or even infer that one does it alone.
No.
And I find also when I'm working with newcomers and we're going through the steps, it's a great opportunity to share with your newcomer, your sponsee, anything that comes up that you like, oh my gosh, I forgot that when I did my formal four step. And you got a perfect opportunity to do it on the spot.
Yeah, sure.
And it's always lesson and growth. It's always that. Yeah. I went to that Came to Believe workshop and I used that workbook that Clarence Snyder started doing these workshops in 1966.
Uh-huh.
And he takes people through the 12 steps except for step 9 in a weekend, in less than 48 hours.
Right, that's right.
And I just did that. And at the end of that, I'm like, why? The conclusion was everybody there. Why do we wait so long to complete the 12 steps? It's crazy.
I hear people say all the time, I've been in this fellowship for 3 years and I'm still on step 4.
I'm like,
wow, that's hard, man.
Part of your problem.
Yeah, that definitely is, you know.
And it's probably because they're trying to do it by themselves.
Yeah, more than likely. Or they have a sponsor that teaches them that they need to go through the steps every year. Or here's one. I love this one. A step a month. Right.
Where anywhere is any of that in any literature? It's not in any literature. No one says that.
Yeah. Now, I understand a step a month as a topic in a topic meeting. Well, this is January, so we're going to talk about step one in January.
That's different.
That's different.
Great.
That's not a personal... The recovery program. In referring to the fourth step in the big book, it says that this business of resentment is infinitely grave. It's talking about the resentment inventory. It starts us out on the resentment inventory. And it breaks it down in the big book. It breaks it down into basically 3 to 4 inventories. The first one is the resentment inventory. The inventory we take about the people that have made us sore and the attitudes we have towards them and that kind of thing. And then the next one is the fear inventory, the things we're afraid of. The third one is the sex or the harms done inventory. And then some people actually have a harms done other than sex, sexual harms inventory. But commonly within the big book, there's three.
Harm that you've done to others, not harm others have done to you.
Right. And so in step four in the resentment inventory, for instance, I always like to point this out, is that you have one time where you get to name the other person, and that's in the first column, right? So in my case, I like to use the example of my aunt, Aunt Pat. So I put down Aunt Pat. In the second column, what happened? She took my inheritance from me. She stole my inheritance from me. Okay, from that moment on, it's all about me. It's not about her anymore. I don't get to point my finger at her anymore. I just recognize what has happened. And then from that moment on, I talk about how I responded to that, what was my part in that. And so when I tell the story of my aunt coming in and basically tricking my mother into changing the will when she was having dementia and losing our home and all that kind of stuff, people go, well, what part did you play?
Right.
Right. And so I had to really look at that. And I'll tell you what it was. My mom and dad were always fearful that I might use my inheritance, right, and use it to buy drugs. And that was early on. Years had gone by, but they had put that in my aunt's head,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I did take money from my parents and use it for drugs and for inappropriate things. I did have a history of that, right? So I had to look at that and go, here was my part. I played a part in her thinking about me, you know, a long time ago.
Yeah, you had
I had to own that.
Little to no integrity.
Exactly.
As far as that goes, yeah.
Yeah. I set the stage for that. Now, it doesn't matter what her motives were. It doesn't matter any of that. What matters is I needed to find my part in it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found was great was in finding my part in that situation, it became easier for me to actually look and find my part in other ones.
Yeah.
Because that was a hard one for me to find my part in.
Right, because that's one of those ones that most people would... If that is a similar thing, they would be saying, like, I didn't do anything.
Right.
Right? Because they're only looking at the surface. They're not looking at the deep down in the history. And,
yeah.
You know, because some people want to look at what's happening right now rather than
right.
looking at how did I get here.
Yeah. Yeah. So instead of going through how to do this step, because a lot of people listening know how to do that. And by the way, I have a PDF file of a real good inventory sheet on the resentment, the fear, the sex, and harms done inventory. If you go to take12radio.com and you click on recovery resources, at the very bottom of that page, there's a PDF file of an inventory form you can use. And it basically mirrors what's in the big book, but makes it a little clearer.
Yeah.
Okay. But one thing I thought was really interesting in the fear inventory, and I was working, going through four-step material with one of my sponsees last week. There's a paragraph in here. It says, we reviewed our fears thoroughly. And what you'll find is Bill Wilson is constantly referring to in a lot of aspects in this literature, thoroughly, honestly, convinced, things like that, at terms that really mean going below just surface, but really digging. It says we put them on paper, even though we had no resentment and connection with them. And this is what I highlighted. I highlighted every time that I was referred to and every time God was referred to in this paragraph. We asked ourselves, so there's one, me, why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance, there's me again, failed us? Self-reliance, there's me again, was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us had great self-confidence, there's me again, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. And then he flips it. Perhaps there is a better way. Than what? Than self-reliance. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon, and here we go, God, there's one. We trust infinite God, there's two, rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns, there's three. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us, there's four. And humbly rely on him, there's five. Does he, there's six, enable us to match calamity with serenity? So, six times it's referring to the divine. Six times it's referring to a power greater than ourselves. And he names him as God several times, and then he says he, capital H, the rest of the times. Don't tell me God is not in this book. It's all over in here. Later he goes on again, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 more times he refers to God, you know. So God is a huge part of this inventory that we're taking. If we move on over to the next page, and this is how you take all aspects of your inventory, it says we reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where have we been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate? Whom have we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done? Do we do that? And you know, Dave, we worked in the same recovery ministry for a long time together. How many guys did the yeah, but? Yeah, but you don't understand what they did. Yeah, but you don't. I mean, you know, the circumstances are around this. Yeah, I'm different. Right? Roger, you ever work with somebody that thinks they're different?
I thought I was different.
So did I.
I think we meet everybody.
Every single one.
They have no understanding. I had no understanding. It comes through the work of peeling the onion.
Yeah.
You know, the more that you get honest with yourself, the more you get honest with God and others, the more is revealed.
Right.
And I'm always smack dab in the middle of the problem. When I recognized, realized, surrendered to the fact that I was always the problem, and no circumstance, no person, no place, no thing was the result. In my consequences were not the result of anything but me and the actions I took. When I realized that, recovery began. Because I was not, there's no solution in the problem. And if I'm the problem, I need help. And it's not within me. I need outside help. And I need a higher power, which can be us, the three of us doing work in the steps is a power greater than me. But it's not God.
It's not God. But it is a power greater than me. Yeah.
Right. And God's mentioned over 130 times in 164 pages. It is plain, simple. It's not even a point of argument. Read the text. It's in there. What are we arguing about?
Sure.
Well, the argument is for a lot of people is like they have an issue with God.
That's their problem. It's not the text.
Right.
It's like, okay, I had a problem with everything too before I got sober. But I couldn't get sober till I admitted I'm the problem. When I read the truth is the truth and it'll set me free if I do it. But if I want to find some reason not to do it, okay, stay stuck and be miserable. That's who I was before I did it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, so my buddy, his name's Mick. He lives up in Sweden, Oregon. He says this about every time I see him, every meeting I've ever sat in, and he's there. He's one of these guys that says the exact same thing every single meeting. But he's consistent. You're never going to get it. He's never going to waver from it, right? And you learn a lot from him. He says, you got a problem with God? Stop and think about the problem he's got with you. And I really took that to heart at one point. Because here I was, a born-again, Bible-thumping Christian from 1971. And I was afraid to admit that I had problems with God. Oh, no, no. I'm a born-again believer, man. I don't need to do step three. You know, and so he asked me, he says, you got problems with God. What's your problem? What's going on here? You know, and the bottom line was, I had to look at, where am I being selfish? Where am I being self-centered? Where do I want God to adhere to my agenda? That right. It was, those were the problems I had with him, because he wasn't doing what I wanted him to do, you know. And when I stopped and thought, man, if he's sitting in heaven with the Son and the Holy Spirit, and they're going, okay, guys, gonna step in and help this guy out one more time, because the love for him is everlasting. You know, God doesn't have a problem with me. He loves me. But I get his sentiment, because I was thinking, well, you know, I have this problem with God. Well, flip it.
What's the problem, right?
Yeah.
Problem is me.
The problem was me.
That was like in the beginning of my, you know, this, my new life, this last time, it's like God answered every single one of my prayers, but it wasn't in the way that I
that
would have
wanted
planned
them.
It out.
Exactly.
It
right.
worked out exactly the way that I wanted it,
right?
But it didn't happen the way that I would have planned it out, because I'm not seeing things from his perspective.
Sure.
If that makes
it
sense.
It says clearly that God's ways are not our ways. You know, right. Proverbs 3:5-6, one of my favorite life scriptures, and that is, lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge him, meaning God, and he will guide and direct your path. Plain and simple, straightforward. Solomon wrote it, arguably the most wise guy in the history of the world. Why do we not do that? Well,
sometimes we're sitting here going this path that I feel like I'm not being directed right now. What do I do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do we do? There, I mean, if you're in a 12-step fellowship, one of the things you do is you do the work, you know, even when you don't feel like doing the work.
Mm-hmm. What I know is that God kept sending me to Alcoholics Anonymous from 1987 until 96 when I got clean and sober. He kept sending me to you guys because he knew that there was a purpose for me in AA, and that the truth would be revealed through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I did them, my relationship with God, who I said I believed in, who I claimed to be born again, my relationship, my faith, everything would change and grow. And that's exactly what happened to me.
Right.
I didn't know that, and he did answer all my prayers, sometimes never in the way I expected or wanted.
Sure.
And sometimes I'm still seeing results of prayers that were offered up 30, 40 years ago. I'm seeing the results of them now because I'm on that journey to uncover, discover his truth and what he's been doing in my life since the day I was born. And maybe I was born with all that, but I sure as heck didn't know it. And the minute I took drugs and alcohol, all bets were off because I didn't learn anything.
Yeah. You said uncover, discover, and I think Dr. John Bradshaw coined the phrase uncover, discover, recover. I've always loved that, because that's what
I turned that into detect, define, destroy. I like it. It's more pointed. 2 Corinthians 10:5. We tear down strongholds. We take every thought captive and make it obedient.
That sounds like a 12-step video game,
right?
Wait, yeah. Say it again. Detect,
define, destroy.
Detect, define, destroy. I like that. So, Dave, let me ask you. In your inventory and doing your inventory and discovering this stuff, you know, what your part was in it and all that kind of thing, was there something in there that was more difficult than others? Was there an element of it that was harder for you than?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. What was it that was real difficult?
I think it's that those things that it's those secrets that you don't want anybody to know, but those are the ones that, you know, when I did my first 4-step, I left out intentionally. When I did I did it the last time, it was in my head. I wrote it down, and then when I went to write it out, I left it out, and it wasn't intentional. But like literally a couple weeks after I did my. Well, it's probably more like a couple of months. It resurfaced in my brain, and so I was in a class in church, and I basically did a kind of a combination fourth tenth step. So I just basically got with my pastor and the person that was teaching the class, who was also a pastor, and I sat down and did like a tenth step, but I did it with them. So it was almost like a combination of a fourth and a tenth step, because I felt like I needed to do that to get past it. And it's
critical thing, Dave, that you brought up, intentional.
Yeah.
Everything I did in hindsight, everything I did was intentional, but right. I didn't think so.
And I think because I remember after I did my first four step when I was in treatment, I did it with the pastor in the center. And it was like weighing on my brain because I was like, I gotta do this, right? I gotta let, and then I was like, no, I can't, like I don't need to share this other stuff, right? Second time I was in there, I thought I'm gonna put it all out there, right? And then I find out that the pastor is on vacation, and so they have somebody else in there, and it's a woman.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh,
oops. No.
I'm ready, but not ready. You know what I mean? So I was like hemming and hawing the whole time beforehand. But when I went in there with the intention of, I was just going to let it all, it didn't matter. I was going to let it buck. But I did unintentionally forget about stuff, which. As soon as it came up, I went and took care of it. Where before, it just would sit in the background and every once in a while it would pop up. Or, you know, it's like, I should probably deal with this at some point.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. Did you have fears? Is that one of the reasons why you had a hard time talking about that stuff? Was because you had fears surrounding around, if I reveal this, this will happen?
Oh, yeah. There's always.
Yeah.
Fear, you know, are people going to think of me differently? Is it going to make me different as a person? You know, is somebody really going to know like what the really deep dark stuff?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So I had kind of a you know, I had a fear of, because I thought that I was unique. No one could have ever been thinking about this situation the way I was thinking about it. You know, I am a sick puppy, and if I reveal this, I mean, this guy is a very understanding guy, you know, it was my sponsor at the time, and I'm like, and everything, but there is no way he's ever gonna look at me straight again,
right?
It'll always be sideways, you know. And that never happened. It never happened. It never came to pass, my fears in that.
Well, the other part that comes into play, and I always tell people if they have fear about doing, you know, the fifth step, right, is where you go and tell somebody, right?
Yeah.
Is you go find somebody that's bound by confidentiality by law, right? Like a pastor. Yeah.
It doesn't have to be your sponsor.
No. But, you know, there's always that chance.
There is.
Because there's no, you know, your sponsor or...
People, you know, are people.
Good friend, you know, or whatever, can all of a sudden, the person that you think is like, yeah, no problem. Yeah. And the next thing you know, they don't talk to you or whatever the situation is. So I always tell people, if you're worried about that at all, then find somebody, you know, even your counselor. You know, I would say that I said that to pretty much everybody. And, you know, I have to say that it saddens my heart that more people didn't take advantage of that, especially being in that program that we were in over a year period, that they didn't do that. There was only one person that whole time that I worked at the program that actually did the fourth and fifth step.
That is sad.
Yep.
That is sad. Roger, was there an aspect of the fourth step that was harder for you than others?
I don't think so. I had that moment of clarity in 1996 when I was in that program for 72 days. And like I said, when I got to the realization that I could find no one to blame for any of my actions and none of my consequences, and when I had nobody to blame, and then I had the realization that there were no secrets with God. He knew everything about me long before I was even born, still loved me. And then I am forgiven. When I was able to process all that, I got to the point where any secrets that I keep are only going to hurt me, and they're going to affect my relationship with God and other people. And so when I got to, it was 18 months between the third step and the fourth step, and people asked me, why did you take so long? And it wasn't because I was afraid of it. I was flat out lazy. I had a PhD in procrastination, and I was flat out lazy and simply did not want to do the work. I just didn't want to do the columns. I didn't want to do it. And I was lazy until one day my sponsor said, you're going to do it today, and you're going to the library and finish it and call me when you're done and be at my office at 8 a.m. in the morning, and we're going to pray together. And that's what I needed, that clear-cut, precise direction. And I went to the library, and I already had the first column done. And when he told me to do the first column, I told him I had no resentments. I told him that. I said, I don't have any resentments. He gave me some suggestions. I got on a plane from L.A. to Honolulu. It was 5 hours, and by the time I landed in Honolulu, I had 57 resentments on paper. 57, which I didn't have any of. But then, from the first column to finishing my fourth step was 18 months.
Yeah.
So I never took the action immediately upon completing that until my sponsor said, go to the library and call me when you get there. And I did. And it was, I don't remember, somewhere between 2 and 4 hours, I was completely finished, did a thorough, fearless moral inventory, came to his office the next morning, we got on our knees, we did a third step prayer. I told him, I did the fifth step, we laughed, we cried, and I never felt better in my life when I walked out of his office. And so, no, I don't think I was afraid of any part of it. I just didn't have any secrets anymore.
Right.
And well, the question always was to me, was, what am I afraid of?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you come up with some answers, you put it on paper and look at that. It was like, really? I'm worried about what somebody thinks. I don't want to live my life that way anymore.
Yeah. What about people that say, and I hear this a lot, and you guys probably have too, somebody that would say, I don't care what anybody thinks about me.
I used to say that.
That's a lie.
I know.
Right.
When they right. say that, it means that has power over them.
Yeah, it does.
When I got into recovery, that was the reveal. It's like, I actually did.
Yeah.
But if I stay away from everybody and they don't really know what's going on, then they can't say anything or, you know.
Right.
So it doesn't really matter. I'm like putting myself into this little box of me, myself, and I.
Yeah.
I think Rule 62 is great. Like, let's not take ourselves so seriously. One of the greatest things I think about recovery in our fellowship is we are the weirdest and funniest people in the world. And we have to share about our proclivities and our weird thinking and all that stuff. That's what makes us part of the fellowship. You know, and I heard a pastor tell me one time, if you want to have good self-esteem, do esteemable acts. So if my goal is to do esteemable acts, and sometimes I fail, which I do, what am I worried about what people think?
Yeah.
Do a what?
Esteemable act. Self-esteem.
Oh, you want to have self-esteem?
Okay.
Do things that are worthy of self-esteem. Do esteemable acts.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, that's deep.
You know when I finally figured out that I had to let that go about I really don't care?
Yeah.
Is when I went into an NA meeting and, you know, you get your key tag and somebody, I don't know what meetings you've been to, but usually like at these clean time things, like you get up in the middle of the room and everybody's in a big circle and then someone gets up and, you know, they say something.
Yeah.
I had 15 people lined up to say something.
Wow.
I was like, freaked me out for a second, but then it was like, this is what I needed.
Yeah.
I needed somebody
to come love you, right? They wanted to come love you.
I needed somebody to hug me when I walk in the door and, and say, welcome, we're glad you're here. And then all these people are saying, good job, we're proud of you. And that's like, that's what we all need in our lives, right? We do fantastically better, like at work, when our boss says, oh, you did a good job. But then they never say it again. And we're like,
we get more from that than we do a raise.
Right.
Give me some positive affirmation. Let me know how I'm doing. Give me I don't mind criticism as long as it's constructive, you know. But yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. Does it stroke the ego a little bit? Yeah, probably. But we need that. We need a little affirmation now and then. Right?
Everybody needs somebody to say you're doing a good job and I'm proud of you. Make it a point to do that all the time.
Yeah.
So do I.
With everybody. Yep. Even in, like, especially in group, when I'm doing group on the phone, if someone's, like, having some great, you know, all of a sudden this epiphany, or they're doing something good or making progress, I'm like, yeah, that's, you're doing a great job and I'm proud of you. And they're like, you know, oh my goodness, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So
that's the very thing they need is encouragement. Right. So I've found that if you want to give constructive input or criticism, the first thing I'll say to them, like after a meeting to a newcomer or something, God, I really appreciate your share. You know what? I'm just like you. Let me tell you what I've learned to do in those situations to come to an answer and a realization that you're okay.
Right.
Yeah, that's excellent, because that paves the way for a person for whatever you're going to suggest or share on it to be palatable for them. You know,
And they come back.
And they come back. So even one of the most critical, harshest characters of the Bible knew how to get his point across effectively, the Apostle Paul. In every letter that Paul writes where he is rebuking the people of God, he always starts out with congratulating them on how much he appreciates them, on their dedication to their personal lives in Jesus. I mean, he builds them up. And then once he's done that, then he'll move into, we got some things we got to work on, guys. You know, and I think if we would practice that, like when we're working with people, when we're sponsoring people, when we're going through a four-step with somebody or whatever it is, if you can't find something positive to say about another person, the problem's you, not them.
I always try to input that old golden rule in everything, right? Treat others the way you want to be treated. So if I want encouragement, then I got to give encouragement.
You
got to
give
others.
Encouragement.
Yeah.
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 Yep. Yep. I love it. I love it. One of the things that I wanted to touch on really quick, we're almost out of time, is listeners, I want you to pay attention to something. If you're reading from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous or from the NA basic text or the Celebrate Recovery literature or whatever program you're in, look and highlight or underline how many times it refers to depending on your own strength versus depending on the strength of a power greater than you. Count those. You'll be amazed that it's all about depending on a power greater than you. And if you'll do that and not be afraid to do that, you know, because we take ourselves off the mantle, right? And that's really key to this whole thing. One of the things that just came to my mind just now, we're talking about complimenting people. One of the rules of thumb when you're being interviewed, and I've got a couple of people that are interviewing me on their podcasts coming up this month. One of the rule of thumbs as somebody being interviewed is to make sure you let the person interviewing you know that their question is a good question. And if you've never thought of that before, listen to interviews and you'll see it all the time where a person will say,
that's a great question.
You know,
yeah.
What
yeah,
about this? Really what about that? Question. You know, Dave, that is a really good question. You know, when I realize that, now I hear it constantly. You know, it's like the number one rule when you're being interviewed: make sure you compliment the interviewer. It appeals to they know they're doing a good job. Because I'm gonna tell you something, as somebody who's interviewed a lot of people, I still get nervous, especially if it's a celebrity or an author. I still get nervous beforehand, and when they say, "Monty, that was a good question," it calms me. I'm like, "Oh, all right, I'm doing okay here."
Yep.
You know, so compliments go a long way. All right. If you have comments about this show, about an honest self-assessment, remember it's an honest one, and would like to share your thoughts on a four-step inventory, please feel free to email us at take12radio@comcast.net. And you can always remark on any of the podcasting platforms that allow you to leave a comment. We would encourage it. If you're watching on YouTube, definitely leave a comment there. And subscribe for fun and for free. Closing thoughts. Roger, you first.
Monty, I thought this had been a great show, just so I give you a little source of encouragement.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Roger.
Yeah. And Dave, I thought you were wonderful too. So how's that? That's a way to start the new year. No, I love this conversation. It's like the whole problem that I've uncovered has always been me.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter which step I'm on. You know, the first step talks about powerless and never talks about it again.
Right.
The second step is a constant uncovering and discovering a relationship with a power greater than ourselves so that we can be restored to a life that he designed for us. And I, since I've done that, I love every day of my life. And I don't have any valid complaints. And I walk around all day long when people ask, "How are you?" I'm blessed. And it has nothing to do with my circumstances. And I'm so grateful for this fellowship, for the power of God, for the 12 steps of AA that have taught me how to live life on life's terms, because I had no clue at the age of 44 when I got here. I didn't have a concept of how to do that and not be selfish, self-thinking, self-seeking, and everything I did and thought. And I'm grateful that I'm not that guy today.
Hmm. Good word. Good word. Dave, closing thoughts.
I don't know how to follow that one.
Yeah, right?
It's a good meeting, good group.
Hey, that's good.
Thank you, Dave.
Who wants to close with a serenity prayer?
That's another one. Go ahead, Dave.
All I can say is I appreciate the opportunity to be here in this, talk about these things with you guys and people out there in out in the world,
in radio land.
We're not just here in the rainy Oregon. We're all over.
Yeah.
Yeah, do something for somebody else.
All right, good word. Do something for somebody else. What have you done
and
today?
Don't
for
get caught.
Without expecting anything in
yes.
return.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah.
All righty. So I mentioned this on our last show that recovery recording artist, Mr. Tom Storms, unfortunately passed away in December. And it was day after Christmas, actually. He was a good friend of Take 12 Recovery Radio. I have committed to the next several shows to be playing his recovery music. This song is called Same Old Shoes. And just listen to it. Let me just put it this way. If nothing changes, nothing changes, right? We all know that. If you're walking around, you can be doing everything right from the ankles up, but if you're walking around in the same old shoes, yeah, you may want to watch your step. Here's Tom Storms with his song, Same Old Shoes.
Got a pocket full of cash, but I'm wearing the same old shoes. If I go down and see that dealer man, there's no telling what I might lose. I used to be a good man. a time. I didn't know what to do when the sun came poking through. Except have another drink and forget about you.
Wearing keep taking you in the wrong direction, maybe it's time to get yourself a new pair and start walking on higher ground. Hey, a very special thank you to my co-hosts this week and to all of you who continue to tune in to the world's original recovery talk and positive music radio station, Take 12 Recovery Radio. And until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man along with the rest of the Take 12 Recovery Radio family, and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.